we have to decide what we want.
Good evening. I'd like to bring this meeting to order of the Carson City Airport Authority. It is April 18th at 6 p.m. at the Community Center in Carson City, the Sierra Room. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Chairperson Law?
Here.
Vice Chair Bowell?
Here.
Member Barrett?
Here.
Member Golden?
Here.
Member Harris?
Here.
Member Harvey?
Here.
Member Rogers?
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. Would you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Approval of the minutes of the past meetings of the Airport Authority. Do I have a motion to do I have any corrections or changes to the meeting minutes as they were drafted? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the March meeting.
So moved.
Member Barrett has moved.
Second.
Vice Chair Vell seconded the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Modification of the agenda. The chairman reserves the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. Items may be taken out of order. Items may be combined for consideration by the authority. Items may be pulled or removed from the agenda at any time. Is there any suggestion for modification of the agenda? Otherwise, I'll proceed. Hearing none, moving forward. Item E, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority may speak on agendized and non-agendized matters related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chairman to calendar the matter for a future airport meeting. Any public comment at this time? Please come forward, state your name, and spell your name for the record.
Yes, my name is...
Turn on the microphone, please.
Yeah,
yes, please. Push.
I feel like I'm in the Senate.
So,
my name is Thurman Elliott. I go by Buzz. I'm a pilot, and I'm helping a friend who has a hangar located at 2963 Arrowhead Drive. It's lease lot 35B. The hangar has a asphalt parking ramp on the south side, and there are some unimproved property behind that parking ramp that Lud Carrero, it's an adjacent hangar to his, and we're trying to replicate the expansion of the parking ramp that he did many, probably 15, 20 years ago. And we're wanting to come to the authority to request a process that we need to follow to expand that ramp. And I've contracted Summit Engineering for survey work. And they've given me some maps. I have some maps here that show the site in particular. If you would like one, I can provide it tonight. And I'd just like a point of contact that I need to work with that we can proceed in a manner that you're acceptable.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. I would suggest, first of all, do I have any questions of the members on the board? I would suggest that you speak with Ken Moen, our new airport manager.
Just met him tonight.
To go forward with that.
Okay.
But that being said, does anyone here have any questions of Mr. Elliott before he does that? I see none, so go forth and do good work.
Thank you.
Any other public comment at this time? Hearing none, we will proceed to item F on the agenda. Dirk, could I have you come forward, please? As most of you know, Dirk was kind enough to come in last August and filled a position of interim manager, as he had done before. And this will be his last meeting with us, and I personally want to thank him for his patience and his work and being so cooperative with the things that I needed from him during this interim period of time. And I would like to present Dirk with this little award for being our interim manager. So if you would come forward. My particular thanks for all you've done. And we appreciate all your hard work. And I also thank you for the 30 days you spent with our new new manager. That is very, very helpful. Thanks so much. Moving forward to the public hearing portion of the meeting, item G1, for possible action, discuss and modify, if appropriate, the tentative budget for fiscal year July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019, which has been submitted to the State of Nevada Department of Taxation by Cohn & Company. And Ms. Cohn, if you would like to make the presentation of the tentative budget, please.
I believe you have a summary. The tentative budget is very summarized, so you have the detail in revenue and expenses that was put together by your airport, your new airport manager, your ex-acting manager, the treasurer, and your chair. Went through the numbers. The only difference in the column that says 2019 preliminary final from the tentative budget that was submitted at this point related to increases by PEBS for health insurance that we needed to include once that came through after the tentative was submitted. So it reflects total revenue of approximately $468,000. Total operating expenses of approximately $413,000 for a net ordinary income of $55,000. Your other income represents FAA grant revenue of approximately $361,000, committed funds relating to fuel flowage fees, jet fuel tax, and gate fee funds, and ROCS material sales for a total other income of almost $414,000. Your other expenses relate primarily due to the AIP 32 rehab taxiway project, AIP 33 perimeter fence design, and a small amount for gate maintenance that totals $397,000. So your net income, based on the preliminary tentative modified slightly budget, is $72,020. And your new airport manager can explain. We did put a couple notes in there regarding increases. The conferences increased based on some additional cost expected for for presentation by the chair to the FAA and for a manager conference, and then related salaries and benefits also increase based upon your new contracts.
Are there any questions of Ms. Cohn? Mr. Takis.
I just have one question. Did we capture the avgas tax? We've got the jet tax in here, but as of October of last year, the Nevada statute changed, and the avgas tax, which used to go get diverted to the Civil Air Patrol, now is supposed to be coming back to each of the airports in which it's collected. I think it's a relatively small amount of money, but I guess I'm just wondering if anybody saw it pop in here, something that we should probably add in.
No, we have not. And have you been receiving any of that money? I don't know. So that's something that maybe Ken can follow up on. And it is not, that hasn't been included as an addition.
Okay. The way to check that, I think, is to get a hold of Kurt Hockel over at NDOT and see if it's coming back to us from him. And that way, it may have been posted to that same account. I don't know.
Yeah, it should be coming back to the city. And that's where it should go. And so whoever our contact, either the treasurer's office or the assessor's office, should be able to tell us.
Thank you. Any other questions? Vice Chair.
That was actually my question as well. And the last time that I talked to the city finance people, they didn't know anything about it. And they kind of kicked it over at us. And every one of these budgets that I looked at, I never saw that number coming up. So I don't think we even know if it's a big number or a small number, because nobody knows where the money went.
Yeah, you wouldn't have seen it on any of the prior budgets. Well, yeah, right, because it would only change this past October. But I thought when I looked at it statewide, it wasn't a very big number, so I'm guessing for Carson City it may be like $5,000 or something like that.
But isn't it going to the counties?
Well, it should. What should be happening is the money should be being remitted in Member Golden might have a better idea because he probably pays it, but I think it goes to the state, and then the state kicks back to the city a portion of it.
I was trying to weigh in on that. I'm going to tell you, you and I can have a conversation offline. I'll send yourself and Ken one of our invoices. We have to prepay all taxes. That's, you know, state law per the NRS. So we have to prepay all the taxes. I am almost certain the tax on avgas is 2 cents a gallon. It may be 1 cent a gallon. And when you look at the amount of avgas that goes through Carson City Airport, I'd say we'd be lucky in a year if we sold 100,000 gallons of avgas. So, and that's all combined operations. So when you factor in 1 cent, you're looking at something that's very negligible. And then, of course, you have a lot of people who they like to bring their own fuel on the field, and they drive out to somewhere and get it because it's cheaper and then come back with it. So you'll never capture that. You're not looking at a lot of money here. I can talk. If you remember to call me, I'll get you an invoice. You can look at the invoice and see. We have to pay the tax on purchase of the fuel. Where it goes from there, I don't know.
I guess, thank you. That's really helpful, and that gives us some good direction. But I think we should try and make sure that whatever small amount it is, it still comes back to us, because the federal law required it to come back to us, and that's what got the Nevada Department of Transportation, Kurt Hockel, to sponsor the legislation so that it covered all the airports. The FAA was telling all the airports that it would be a violation of the FAA grant assurances if we didn't do that. Most states did what we did. They fixed it. California kind of thumbed their nose at it and said, oh, we think all that money, which is really right now going to highways, is finding its way back to airports. And so there's still a battle going on with them. But from our standpoint, we like things to be nice and tidy. So thank you. We'll follow up. Ken and I will follow up.
Thank you, and we'll advise Ms. Cohn what to do with that if we do find that we've received a portion of it so far. Otherwise, we'll look to the city to refund it into the next few months. Okay, thank you. Any questions of Ms. Cohn? Mr. Rogers.
I just have a few detailed questions about the proposed budget. First one is on tie-down fees. I noticed that we're budgeting for a dramatic reduction in tie-down fees next year as compared to this year, and I was wondering what the logic stream was behind that.
My understanding, when they were discussing this, that they didn't expect as much in tie-down fees this next year.
I think a portion of that had to do with the amounts that we were receiving for the airplanes that were over in the dirt, and those have been moved away, except for two. They're pretty much derelict.
That's a different line. Isn't it, or is that cars?
That's cars.
Might I suggest that we have our new manager just take a quick look and make sure that it makes sense, you know, to him. Second detailed item is for the open house. We're showing a significant reduction in income for that item compared to last year, while the expenses stay the same. And I was wondering whether that was an accident or whether that we actually have an expectation of having a reduction in income relative to the open house. So once again, you know, I don't necessarily need an answer right now, but I'd like that to be looked at. My third comment is that I wanted to thank the makers of the budget for reflecting a much more reasonable cost for phone and internet service. That's something that makes sense relative to what I think we might use. The budget for last year was like really shocked me, but the budget for next year made quite a bit more sense. And then the last detailed item that I'd like to see looked at is the auditing line item, and I'm not sure if we do anything auditing wise other than financial auditing, but if we just do financial auditing under that line item, I think we should shop that around if we actually are spending something on the order of 20 grand for a financial audit. I don't think that's the going rate. I think you can get that service for an enterprise our size for around half that or less.
That one I can respond to. So that includes all services all year, and last year you had a single audit. So that's a special federal audit that you have to do an above regular audit. So that's all year. Everything I do, I come out on an interim basis, since your office managers, your airport managers, are not necessarily financial people, and double check the postings for leases and do a lot of work all year. So it's a not to exceed for any service I do all year. But it's under the audit line.
So that, all right, so this includes services that you provide in addition to a independent outside, a firm that would do a financial audit on
it? So the single audit itself is about $12,000, and then any other services I provide. So, and I, some years I do less, some years I do more. With an acting manager, I did more this past year. So, yeah. So it's a financial audit in accordance with government auditing standards, plus the single audit when you have more than $750,000 in federal funds. So this year you probably won't have that for next year, so it'll be less. But you can shop it. I don't have a problem with you shopping it. I'm just telling you that I can explain it.
Thanks for the explanation. I think that $12,000 number makes much more sense to me, so I'm comfortable with that.
Thank you. Vice Chair.
I have two questions. You're also providing bookkeeping services for us. Is that correct?
No, I do not do bookkeeping. I do interim audit services throughout the whole year, where I'll come in and make sure that 12-month lease payments were billed for everyone, and make sure just that follow-up that the bank reconciliations are done. There's not, you know, just kind of interim audit services.
Okay. And then my second question is, there's an item in here that says in the neighborhood, but it doesn't have an account number on it. What is that?
That's something that Ken just added.
It just says in the neighborhood, and there's no, it's under expenses.
That was that community development you said, call it in the neighborhood. You sent me that email to add that.
Oh, I didn't mean that.
I didn't know.
As a line item. I said it'll be in the neighborhood of $1,500. It was for marketing.
I don't know what it was for. He said, just put it in.
I'm sorry. It was the marketing money that we were discussing in an email that I copied you and Steve on. And I just, she goes, how much do you anticipate? And I said, in the neighborhood of $1,500.
And the reason for that was talking to people in the, putting out informational handouts and so forth about drone operations and events that were of concern to the airport in the general vicinity of the airport, that sort of thing.
So that should go into our marketing.
Marketing budget.
Yes.
Marketing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Correct.
Let's get that.
So this means that in the neighborhood meant two things.
So I'll move that for your final.
Good. Nice catch, though.
Super weird.
Title our budget that.
All right. Any other questions for Ms. Cohn? Okay. At this time, with the corrections and the review that we have discussed here, I would accept a motion to approve the discussed modifications to the tentative budget for the fiscal year July 2018 to June 30th, 2019, so that we can comply with the publication and filing requirements prior to the May 23rd meeting, right? So it'll come back to us so that we can comply with that.
Yes, so the May 23rd meeting will be where you'll approve the final budget to a public hearing. You can still make changes at that point, but then it'll be final. You'd sign it and submit it.
Any other questions? There's Vice Chair has asked about travel, and that's included in the conferences line. Which is 6137, yeah, and there's a bit of mileage money in there as well for those kinds of things. Okay. So do I have a motion to approve this and have, yes, Larry?
I guess a question, I think we're going to, like you said, have a public hearing and approve a final budget and our May meeting. I think this is really to get everybody's feedback, which we've got some great feedback to go review. And we'll come back with those modifications in May. So I'm not sure it requires a board vote at this time. I just think we've taken the, if anybody disagrees with the budget, would like to hear their comments now.
Mr. Chakas.
Yeah, it does not require a vote at this time. I set it up for that just in case you guys wanted to approve it, but we need to be very clear. All we're doing is approving changes to the tentative. This is not our approval of the final.
That being said, we will, if there are no other questions, we will move on.
Can I make one other comment?
Yes, go right
publicly,
ahead,
Ms. Cohn. Publicly, just on your question on the phone, I think on the phone cost, you know, Dirk spent a lot of time on all expenses the last few months, or I don't know how long he was there, time flies, but he spent a lot of time looking at all your individual costs and reducing costs for the airport because of things that you really didn't need or weren't getting any benefit from. And that's why you'll see some decreases in utilities, wastewater, and telephone.
Thanks for that clarification, and thank you, Dirk. I know you did put a lot of effort into that. It was well appreciated.
Any other questions, Ms. Cohn, or statements before we move forward?
Nope.
Thank you very much for all your assistance. Appreciate it very much. Moving on to item number two, for possible action, discussion, and approval of changing the May 16th, 2018 meeting date to May 23rd in order to approve fiscal year July 31, 2018 through June 30th, 2019 operating budget. Ken, would you address this, please?
Yes, with Ms. Cohn's guidance, we're have to determine this date by the statute, the NRS, of when to hold the meeting and how to publish it. And so in order to comply with that and meet our monthly meeting, instead of doing two meetings, we'll move it from the third Wednesday in May to the fourth Wednesday in May to satisfy the requirement of the budget approval process.
Any questions on that item?
I would just add that the availability of this room is very limited, so I think our expectation is that that meeting will need to be held in the terminal building.
I think we've already had that approved. I submitted an email through Tamara's office, and they approved that. So it's going to be right here.
Tamara, do you have any other input to that? Do you know if that was approved?
I think you spoke with April.
Yeah.
We've
emails on that.
So the room is booked through the community center, and I gave Ken the right contacts to talk to. And I'm hoping it'll be in this room. Otherwise, we're going to have some serious setup challenges.
Right. No, I think we're squared away.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Moen before we move to a motion on this? At this time, I would entertain a motion to move that we approve setting the authority meeting in May to the 23rd in this building here, in this room.
So moved.
Okay, Mr. Harris has moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Mr. Harvey has seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None heard. Motion carried.
Chairman.
Yes,
just,
sir.
Just wanted to remind you to call for public comment on each of the issues.
Thank you. Any public comment on the change of date in May? Hearing none, we won't. Thank you. We will move forward to item number 3. For possible action, discussion, and possible approval of Sierra Skyway Incorporated building plans and addendum to the lease agreement in order to accommodate construction of a utility riser outside the leasehold. Mr. Moen.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Dennis, Dean Greco came to the office last couple of weeks explaining that he had a need to seek the installation of the fire utility riser outside his current leasehold. I haven't seen the plans yet. He does have them with him tonight. So without having been able to review those prior to this meeting, I think that we won't be able to vote on this issue tonight. But he could probably explain where they're at with this process, having met with his the architect, I believe, and also the engineer about the size of the space that we're talking about. So we've had a couple of discussions internally, including a site visit, to see how the existing property up there, which is the Heritage Hangars, has a similar setup, where there's just a small riser room sitting in this easement area. So if we can, at your discretion, bring Mr. Giangreco up to discuss that.
Mr. Giangreco, would you like to come forward, please? State your name, spell your last name for the record.
Dennis Giangreco, Giangreco. So just like Ken was saying, we need 81 square feet on two of the buildings to put a separate riser backflow room onto the hangars for the fire sprinkler system. I wasn't aware that I needed to do anything because there was already one there on the Heritage hangars, and we're here to try to figure out what to do.
Mr. Takis, do you have any comment on this as to how to proceed?
Yeah, I mean, if it's outside the leasehold, we can just do a lot line adjustment or something to include it. My only concern would be whether we've cleared it with the fire department, because my recollection is that area on the south side of the leasehold, between that area and the Jet Ranch hangars, had to be left open as a fire access. So if they're okay with it, then I think we should be okay with it. It's a pretty wide. You're going to tell me, Brian, how wide it is right now? I can see
it's about 45 feet.
It's 45 feet. I don't know how wide the fire department needs, but I would just check with them. And it sounds like Mr. Giangreco says it appears that Heritage Hangars did the same thing. It appears that they may have done that without us realizing that they had also built outside their leasehold, and so we should probably contact them and make the correction to their lease as well. We're talking about a really small adjustment to their boundary line. But I think the critical consideration would be just to make sure that by building south into that area that was reserved for fire access, that that doesn't restrict the fire department. I'm guessing 45 feet should be plenty for the fire trucks, but I'm not a fireman.
Thank you. Whether we put this, I would prefer that we not put this into abeyance to another meeting, that we just state that so long as Mr. Giangreco checks with the fire department, gets us a letter that says that they would not have an objection to it, and brings it back to us, that he wouldn't be held up on his construction at that point. Yeah. Is there any other discussion or questions of Mr. Giangreco?
Suggest, of course, that our
Mr. Barrett.
Airport manager be included in that, because another meeting will be a while. May 23rd, as I recall. So
right.
He would be in the loop on that.
Okay, I would suggest.
Yeah, I don't see that as a problem.
Okay.
One question then. I need stamped plans from you guys to submit with the city. I need to put these in with my plans. So how can we get them signed off? And then I'll get you the letter this next week, you know, with the fire department. But I need to try. I'm trying to get it in by Friday. So how do I do it if we're not going to take any action? Can we still sign off the plans if I get you a letter, you know, with the fire department? I'll get you a letter in a week or whatever it takes.
I think you can still go ahead with your plan, which is to conditionally approve them. The airport engineer advises me that he's already reviewed the plans and he's approved them. And so if you guys take action to approve them here, that would allow him or whoever needs to sign off to sign off on the plans. And so your motion would be to approve the plans and conditionally approve the addendum based on the positive feedback from the fire department. And the addendum will really probably just take the form of a lot line adjustment for a puny 4x4 or something area.
Okay. Any other questions based on that comment on Mr. Takis's input? If not, public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the plans and conditionally approve the addendum that would include the area necessary for the pad. And that the airport manager be tasked with receiving a letter from Mr. Giangreco regarding the accommodations of the utility riser as presented. Vice Chair has moved.
I second.
Mr. Harris? Any discussion on the motion?
Should we put a date? Should we put a date for a response so that we can close the item out at the next meeting?
I'll have it to you in a week. I'm going to get with the fire department and just get a letter from them saying it's okay.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. And do we want to add 7 days to that, or do we want to leave it open as it is? We'll leave it open as it is.
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None heard. Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Giangreco. Moving on to item 4 for possible action, discussion to approve the Carson City Airport gate card policy. Mr. Mullen.
Thank you. Chair Law, as you recall at the last board meeting, there have been several board meetings where the gate card policy had been discussed, and I believe the last discussion, Mr. Golden recommended that we take a review at this and bring it back to the board for resolution at this meeting. So I did a comprehensive review of this with the assistance of Dirk. And we talked about how the gate call policy has evolved over the period of years, and I've included that in the background of this memorandum. So what we've currently tried to bring together as a final solution that the board will approve today, and we could put it in our rules and regulations and also adopt it to the airport driving rules and regs when somebody gets a new gate card or renews their card. So we have an opportunity to meet with each of the holders between now and the end of the fiscal year as part of the renewal process, ensuring that they've verified their gate card numbers, also verified their contact information, including email. The board did approve, and we've carried that forward, about not assigning an annual fee to the gate card process, but that if the card holder failed to update that information by July 1st, that there would be a reactivation fee. So we put the onus on the gate card holder to be accountable for not only the card, but also responsible for ensuring that they've updated the information on an annual basis. It does not list it in the policy that we're going to notify them, but will be our procedure to carry it out. We didn't want to put a date in there. I could notify them beginning January 1, and that information just needs to be updated by July 1. So that was our objective. I felt if we, from my experience currently, that we have a 30-day window to do it between June 1 and June 30. Well, people are doing it now. So I just felt that was too constraining, and I'd rather just deal with it as they come versus dealing with 200 of them all at the same time. So the proposed gate card policy at the very bottom is we've kept it very concise. We've numbered them so that people have questions about items in particular, we can just refer to the line number. There is built into the policy the ability to give additional gate cards based upon need. But I think my review has focused more on the purpose of somebody having a card and the right to airport access. So if there's no longer a need to have airport access, I think we should limit those cards in that manner. So if it's a FBO that has an employee card, we're making the FBO accountable for that so that they ensure that they get the card back from the employee when the employee leaves. And if there are guest cards that are given out, I would prefer that we eliminate that and that the hangar owner or operator escort somebody that needs access so that they just don't have unfettered access. Because I think that's what we've discovered as we've gone through this, of there being cards out there that nobody even knows about. So we've allowed the airport manager to make those discretionary decisions. So we've eliminated the need for the term temporary contractor or somebody of that nature. If there's airside work going on, obviously we're going to make sure that there's going to be access for contractors. So we've kept it pretty open and allow the authority to give the airport manager discretion to make decisions on that, so it's not something that becomes arduous in that manner. So with your approval, if there aren't any questions, I would recommend that we adopt the proposed gate card policy listed on the back of the memo, items 1 through 7.
Comments on this from the members? Vice Chair.
Two comments. One is I'd like to see the language in here change from persons who own. Anywhere it says own, it should be owner-operator. We're an FBO as the flight school. We don't own any of our airplanes. We lease them all, and we need out there. And then secondly, there's nothing in here about an agreement. I'd like to see an agreement or something so that we bind the cardholders to ensuring that they maintain the insurance and stuff like that. There's nothing in this policy that says anybody has to have insurance on. But it does talk about these regs, but the regs aren't integrated into this policy. That's a separate document.
The driving rules and regulations are a separate document, and they get one of those when they receive a gate card. So we're just going to implement the policy into the driving rules and regs.
The other thing is we already, when someone requests a gate card, they already sign an agreement.
Correct.
It gives us their contact number and information and their hangar number.
That's
and all
correct.
That. Yes.
We do, but this is the new policy, and it doesn't say that on this document.
So in item one, it could say gate access cards are only issued to persons who sign an agreement and who.
And also maybe change persons to some other thing because I'd say probably a quarter of the airplanes on the airport are owned by unnatural LLCs. They're not persons.
They are in Nevada.
Are they? Are they a real person?
Yeah, I think an easy way to fix that would be...
just fix the language, because it sounds...
Yeah, we'll fix it. So it'll be persons who own or operate, and that should cover it. And persons in the state of Nevada does include LLCs, corporations, and other entities.
Are there any other questions before we go forward with this?
I just wanted to add that according to Jim Hightower in Texas, he says he'll believe that a corporation is a person when they hang one down there or execute them.
Member Rogers.
Ken, could I just please ask to take a look at the last sentence in item 7? I read it twice, and it confused me both times that I read it. And gate access card holders will be required to pay a reactivation fee for each issued gate access card. And it's like, we're not going to reissue a card. So I'm thinking just, you know, I'm just talking semantics. Could that say reactivation fee for each card that must be reactivated or something, so that, you know, something like that?
Yeah, that's a good comment. Yeah, we'll rewrite that.
Any other questions? Any public comment on this? Dr. Graber, please come forward. State your name and spell your last name.
Good evening. Brad Graber, G-R-A-B-E-R. I've printed up the agenda for today, but I don't have anything about the policy. So is that policy available? I'm sure that it is, but how would those of us that use the gate card system know what the policy is?
Yeah, just to respond, everything that the board looks at this meeting is posted on the web page. So if you just go to the web page, you can print everything that's being discussed, including this policy.
So are you going to pass it before I can read it? I mean, I looked on the website to see if there was anything related to this, but... Thanks. I won't bore you to read it and think about it and decide, but I would ask that you would allow me and maybe some of the other hundreds of people that have cards access to this before you say slam dunk done. If that's something that you'd consider, I'd appreciate it.
Vice Chair.
Have we emailed this out to the contact list for everyone who has a card? Do they know that this is happening?
I would interject that the website is fine, Brian, but because anybody that asks questions could be directed there. Stamps are 4 bits apiece.
No, I'm in email, though, because we have a list now of all the cardholders and their email contact. Did we send a note out with the new policy?
Everything that, as Mr. Takis described, was posted on the website. I have it up here now, and it's item number 3 on under here, but no, we can email it to all the gate card holders. That was our intent once it was completed, but you know,
please accept my apologies. Right, is this document on the website?
Yes.
Oh, well then I'm just I'm a person of the 1950s and I did not I'm not capable enough to read it, and I please accept my apologies.
Do we have any indication of when this particular paper or this particular item was posted on the website, was put on the website?
I believe it was posted on Monday of last week. Friday of last week. Yeah.
Thank you.
I talked to half a dozen people around a hangar that I use, and I said, I'm going to the meeting tonight. You guys want me to listen to anything? I said they're going to do something about the gate policy. Oh, they said, what are they going to do? And I said, I have no idea. So nobody else did either. And so please accept everybody's apologies for being so ill-informed.
I apologize for not making it a higher level of distribution. We did talk about it at our meeting that we held on Saturday. We mentioned the gate card policy, I believe, in the Meet the Manager meeting that was held on Saturday at 11 o'clock.
It's a big deal. Thanks for understanding.
You bet.
Yeah. And then lastly, unrelated, I'm speaking real close to the microphone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can't hear a thing back there. And so that means anybody else that comes is, so is there any technology available to turn the dude up? I just ask you to look into that because when I come to the meetings, I've never been able to hear well. But I have an appointment tomorrow, so maybe I'll come with.
Thank you, Dr. Graber. Well, that being said, so far as the tenants who are not informed about or did not find this on the internet, on our website, do we want to go forward with approving this tonight as amended, or do we want to yet again put it into our next meeting? Member Golden.
If I can take a moment to give, if I can take a moment to give some point of clarity to this matter. In reading through this gate card policy, nothing has changed except that we are now incorporating it into the driving rules. So I see no reason why we shouldn't act on this as a board this evening. There's no change. We're just incorporating this, folding it into the driving rules and regs. That's it.
And Mr. Golden, you're correct. All we did from the last meeting was just put it all comprehensively in one document, and it's been discussed since I think the first meeting I attended was in November. And the only difference since that November meeting is the elimination of the $10 renewal fee.
Any further public comment on this item? Hearing none. I would entertain a motion to approve the gate card policy recommended by the airport manager.
I move.
Mr. Harris has moved. And I have a second from the vice chair. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Nay. Hearing none, motion passes. Moving on to item 5, for possible action, discussion, and approval of travel of board chair and manager to attend the FAA Western Pacific Region 9th Airports Conference, June 12th through 14th, 2018 in Torrance. Last year when the FAA came and did a site inspection of the airport, there was a findings letter which we as a board and as the manager all over time, Tim, and then Kurt, and then myself and our chief counsel, we worked to satisfy those concerns and ended up getting a letter of compliance from the FAA on that inspection finding. And at the February meeting, I think I had gotten an email from the FAA asking if council or I could come down to the Torrance meeting to go over how we stepped through that compliance process, and they asked for us to make a presentation at that time. So I plan on being in Los Angeles in Torrance for that event. Mr. Takas is unavailable at that time, and they are holding it over a three-day period, the 12th, 13th, and 14th. I've already made my reservations, but what we were doing here was trying to find out, trying to get approval for the travel costs for the new manager and myself to attend that meeting and do what the FAA asked us to do. So any discussion on that?
Mr. Graber. I would just like to thank everybody who worked on that. As everyone knows who was on the board at the time, my concern was that we comply with the FAA's requests. And as Mr. Takas pointed out, during that period of time, we actually are leaders at this level because the FAA wasn't really clear and their regulations seemed to deal with larger airports than us. So I think we're actually leaders in this, and that's good that they're asking us to come down and walk through what we did so that other airports like ours can see that. So I would favor this idea.
Any other comments on this item? Any public comment on this item? Vice Chair?
Two things. One is I kind of respectfully disagree. I don't think that we push back enough on these guys hard enough. And secondly, is this a conference that we would have gone to anyway or not? It was something that we were already scheduled to do. Is that the case?
Mr. Mullen?
When I first was hired, I went to the Nevada Airport Association meeting the end of March, and the FAA was represented there by the assistant ADO and the one of their planners, and we had a one-on-one meeting with them, and this is a free conference the FAA puts on. It's the 9th annual conference, and at that time, I knew that Linda was, or Chair Law was going down to make the presentation. And I asked the ADO if they thought it was important. It was the conference would be something that would be important for me to attend, and they recommended that I do attend that. So I believe at the time when we did our contract, that's not something I listed on the list of conferences that I felt I should attend. But hearing this back from the FAA, being new in the role, I think they believed it was critical for me to go to that as well.
The other thing I would add is there is no registration fee for this conference. It'll just be travel, the time off to go down there for Mr. Mullen, and travel costs, which include transportation and lodging.
May I weigh in? And I appreciate your comment about our Vice Chairman, respectfully. I assume these guys you're talking about are the FAA? Yeah. Well, I and you and I obviously have slightly different perspectives on this as the representative of the city here. I'm just concerned that we stay in compliance. I fully understand how you feel about the FAA. I'm not a big fan of the feds myself, generally speaking, but we, you know, need to comply as best we can, and we need to comply in ways that satisfy them. I don't think that they're... I don't think that they're always logical, but nevertheless, if they lean on us, we can lean back some, but we need to cooperate with them as much as we possibly can. But your point is well taken, that it'd be nice to get them to see it our way, but my 50 years of dealing with feds tells me they don't see things our way very often, not just at the airports, but otherwise.
Vice Chair.
Yeah, I don't want to be there some sort of misunderstanding that, you know, fundamentally I'm opposed to regulation or anything like that. That's not the case. What I'm getting at on this one is that I think that there was a lot of bad PR that was generated between airport tenants and this board over this issue that continues to fester around. I know for a fact that we've lost a couple of leaseholders over this issue because of misunderstanding of the policy. And I think that when we went back and looked at the reason why the policy was written by the FAA in the first place, it didn't really apply to us because it was, it was meant for airports that had received grant monies for doing development of hangars and stuff like that, where the hangars were owned by the airport, not by independent private parties, whereas most of our hangars or all of our hangars have been all developed with private money. So. I know there's wisdom in picking your battle and choosing when to fight, and I think this is one of those issues where it's much easier to comply than to, you know, spend legal fees and all this other stuff on it. That said, I don't see the point of us spending money to go to a conference that, I mean, what do we hope to gain out of this? What's the purpose of sending people off to this conference?
If I could respond. I think you're generally right. That hangar policy was really driven toward airports that own the hangars and airports that do hangar projects. The airport, the FAA generally does not finance any hangar projects, so they would be other airports where they use their own money and generated hangars. And that's evident in the hangar policy because it talks about things like the authority or the governmental entity controlling the rents and the availability of hangars, which is something when you lease the whole block to somebody who's developing it, we're not in that business anymore. We're out of it. But I still think it's valuable to go to this this conference. I know that In the past, Jim Clegg had gone a few times as airport engineer, and other people on the authority had gone to this. It's a great opportunity to get some good face time with the FAA's airports division. And given the increase in funding to the appropriations bill, a lot of which is discretionary, I think all the face time we can get with those guys is going to be valuable. If we can talk them into using some of that discretionary funding to build a new terminal building or some other facility on our airport, this would be, I think, a very small investment toward that kind of goal. And so I personally would recommend that you go. I have to say, I'm a little bit flattered, and you should be too, by the FAA, because their comments to me is when they looked at what we did it right. And by that, I'm not so sure that they're referring to the fact that they got in our face about, you know, hangar usage, but rather that we took a really intellectual approach. What we did is we sat down, figured out a way to collect all the data before we reacted, which is what certain people wanted us to do, to react right away. We collected all the data, and the end result is we have a great inventory of what we have. It's not publicly available. It shouldn't be publicly available. But now we can manage it, and now we can determine that we're in compliance with the FAA. And I think that's the thing that they were really impressed by. And that's something that I don't know, maybe some airports have and some don't, but they were impressed that we took that stand. And so I think that's worth blowing our horn a little bit, especially at this kind of conference where we develop some good relationships with the ADO, who will be deciding eventually how that funding goes out of the new appropriations. So I recommend that you go, and I think this is among the cheapest that you can go to because there's no fee.
Member Golden.
Yeah, I would strongly encourage our airport manager and airport authority chair to attend this conference. Having exposure with these folks at the FAA, who essentially do hold the purse strings to grant funding, we couldn't have a better, more efficient way and means to get with them. And it also shows that we're engaged in the process with them. A lot of airports don't send representation to this conference. I would venture to guess most airports of this size and stature don't even bother. I would encourage us to do it. It's a very small investment considering what we get out of the people that you're going to have exposure to at the conference.
May I add something? Because
I
think the vice chairman has made some good points, but we all know that this was brought to the FAA's attention by someone who had an axe to grind, I'll put it that way. And we have, I think, buried that hatchet with that person. I certainly hope so at any rate. And if we haven't, we've certainly held him in abeyance. So I think that was worth it. But I'm glad you're watching the pennies that we spend. I'm not always happy when travel budgets come out from government, but in this case, I think it might be money well spent because, again, I'm trying to stay in good favor with the FAA, and they seem to have liked what we did, so we'll just keep on that horse if we can.
Member Harris.
Just a quick question. We're talking about spending money on travel, but I haven't heard a dollar amount, some sort of range. Did I miss something?
No, but I can tell you that the nightly rate for the hotel was a special rate of $173 a night, and there were limited rooms available, and then it went to $283. So my reservations are at the Howard Johnson across the street for less than $100 a night. So I don't know if Mr. Moen's made his reservations yet, but it would be about $300 for the room nights, and then the mileage back and forth for me. Mr. Moen?
I haven't made the reservation. I was going to wait until the committee approves or disapproves it. But airfare to LAX is probably in the neighborhood of $300 or so. And then per diem, whatever that is.
Okay.
So we're probably talking that $700 bucks, maybe from one for Linda and then 700 for me, myself.
Mr. Harvey?
Yeah, we're talking finances. As the treasurer, this is nothing that's going to hurt our budget or really change anything in the outcome of the year. All it really is great transparency in bringing this forward to us. Normally an item that would not require coming before us if it was in the budget, but because we already spent that, this is appropriate. And so for me, I also support this, that they asked us, and I think keeping a relationship with the FAA is a really smart idea for this airport. And I also support it, but it's certainly for financially, in my opinion, this is not of grave concern to the airport.
Once again, however, I'd like to thank Vice Chairman for raising the question, because we always need to watch our spending. So it's a good point to put the microscope on that.
Absolutely. Any further questions? Mr. Rogers.
Along the line of minding our pennies, do you think we could gain an acceptable amount of favor with the FAA by just having Chairperson Law attend, and since she's going to be down there anyway, and let our new manager have his face time in front of the FAA as part, and when they start doing the master planning process and so on, you know, the other opportunities, you know, I think we could, you know, save a few pennies by doing that if it wouldn't have a negative impact on our, you know, trying to create goodwill with the FAA.
Personally, I would prefer that he attends so that he gets that additional time with them in his position that he has assumed. I think it's a good PR move as well as an informative move on our part. But that's certainly up for discussion.
I think there's also a great deal of knowledge transfer that takes place in that three-day period. They have workshops and different items, including technical info. And so based on that, if it was just a public relations trip, I think that would be different. But I think it's also educational opportunity. And being new to the role and to the airport, I think that buys some goodwill with the folks that want to help us do our job the best.
The other thing I would mention is with the new bill that came out of Washington, D.C., with $1 billion to go to rural airports, I think the more we get a chance to talk to them, the bigger chance we have of doing some projects and getting a part of that money, which is not required to have a matching grant or matching money. So anything we can talk to them about while we're down there as far as acquiring property or a terminal building or covering the cost of the ring road that the FAA won't cover, I think all of those things would be valuable in the next year or so as far as the potential for us to get a grant to pay for them.
Any activity that would allow us to make progress on maybe finding somebody else's money to work on the terminal building for, I'm all for.
Yeah. May I add, it may not be the proper point, but I'm going to say it anyway. I want to commend our new airport manager. I know he's reached out to me and probably everybody on this board, and I was at a meeting last night where I ran into the mayor, and he told me that he had met with Ken, and I think Ken had reached out to him as the city manager, etc. He's being very proactive right off the bat, and I commend that.
Okay. Any further public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve travel expenses for the FAA conference. So moved. Mr. Harvey has moved.
Second.
Mr. Golden has seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
None. Nay. Mr. Bowell? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving on to item 6 for possible action and discussion approval of direction to the consultant and engineer regarding FAA AIP 31 master plan, Mr. Fitzgerald.
On this agenda item, very little new information. We're still moving forward with
Please get on the mic.
I'm sorry. A little bit closer this time, sorry. Nothing new to report. We're still progressing forward on airport alternatives for development and so forth. The revised aircraft
number that was developed by Chairman Law has adjusted the forecasting, and that will be presented at our next meeting, which at this moment was tentatively scheduled for the end of May, but because of some of the aircraft forecasting that may have changed, we may need to push that back to mid-June or late June. So that's where the airport master plan is progressing at the moment. When new information comes up about alternatives, it's most likely going to be next meeting that I'll have some basic ideas of the alternatives that are coming out, and then definitely once we have that next planning advisory committee meeting, then we'll have more information to share with the general public at that time.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 7. For possible action, discussion, and approval of request for qualifications, RFQ for aviation planning services for 2018 to 2023, and corresponding RFQ for architectural engineering services 2018 to 2023. Mr. Moen, Mr. Takis.
I'll jump in on this one. Our contract with Atkins is a 5-year contract, and it expires this September. And so following the FAA procedures and the Nevada state law procedures, we need to go out through this process of kind of putting it out to bid. I say kind of because it's not like a good or service where we put out, here's what we want to buy, you know, give us the best price on it. We're hiring professional services. Therefore, under the Nevada statutes, what we do is we do a request for qualifications, an RFQ, and we request that people submit their statement of qualifications. And then once we get the statement of qualifications, then what we do is we rank them, much like the process we did in looking at airport managers. We rank them and then go to the first one and negotiate prices. The FAA's regulations make it very clear that we need to put out a separate RFQ for engineering services, architectural engineering, which is one category, and planning, which is the other category. We did that 5 years ago, and we found that it made the most sense to go with one firm to do both. The FAA says that's okay, but you still need to go to you have to issue your RFQs for both, and then look at what you get back before you make that kind of determination. And so what we've prepared for you, Mr. Moen and I have prepared for you, are the RFQs that should be issued for both of them. We'll publish them in the paper. We'll send them to each of the firms that we're aware of, which are largely the firms that attend the Nevada Aviation Association conference, many of whom Ken met at the recent conference. And then hopefully we'll get some good responses and then evaluate the responses, rank them, and proceed to negotiations. We'd like to get this out soon so that we have as much time as possible to collect intelligent responses, and then we have time to evaluate them and issue the new contract. I mean, it could well be that after we go through this whole process, we still decide to stay with Atkins. But if we're going with somebody else, it would be really important that we're rolling along at a good rate so that we don't get squeezed at the end. One last thing, or a couple of things just to indicate, is that if we select more than one party for, you know, like one for engineering, architectural, and one for planning, then the other exercise we need to do is break out within our ACIP which projects are planning or what elements of those projects are planning versus which elements are engineering. And so that's a kind of a project that would have to go forward if that's the way we end up going. I'm trying to think if there are any other issues. If you have any questions, Mr. Moen and I can certainly field them.
Vice Chairman.
Why are these 5 years? How come they're not like 1 year or 2 year?
Because it's a lot of work to do, and the FAA actually allows 5 years, so most airports do it on the 5-year basis.
Mr. Golden.
It's probably not the right time to ask these questions or make these comments, but I'm going to do so anyways. And looking at the items listed off the ACIP that are in these RFQs, just a point of reference, this may be new to everybody, but from what I understand, the FAA is no longer funding through the grant program airport snow removal equipment. Yeah. So I've received that from a very reputable source. They are not funding that. Now, that could change. As we all know, the FAA changes its mind like the wind blows. The other things that would be nice to have in here, which I guess would be part of our ASIP, would be a WAS approach if we're not going to have an instrument approach, which we're probably not going to have an instrument approach. I mean a precision approach. It would be nice to have a WAS approach into the airport. And the other thing, I'll just leave it at that. But you need to know that snow removal equipment, as of this time, the FAA is no longer funding. Acquisition the same.
Thank you. You know, that's what we should do is when we next look at our ACIP, which we could even do next month, we can make those changes. As of now, this is the ACIP that we have filed with the FAA, so this is the one we should include right now to get these out. But the RFQ does state that these projects can change from time to time because we all recognize the ACIP. We end up changing it every year. And then you might also recognize that those items with the snowplow, the stuff in 2023, that's like our Christmas list. It keeps getting pushed back. It's stuff that is generally low priority for the FAA, but we'd like to have it. So we always include it in the ACIP just in the hope that, you know, maybe Christmas will come. And I kind of say that facetiously, but it really did happen to us when we reconstructed the runway. We were working really hard to save the money for a matching grant and sweating bullets that we wouldn't be able to save enough. And then along came the ARRA. I can't even remember what it stands for.
Reinvestment Recovery.
And that, because it was under ACIP, it pushed us right into line for the funding, and that was 100%. It wasn't matching funding. So in 2010 or 2011, whenever we did that, all of a sudden we were in a position to get $11 million to do our runway. So it's important for us to keep those in here, but the other side is we have to be realistic that the stuff that we have on our 2023 is stuff that may never happen. It just keeps getting pushed out. But, yeah. But my recommendation is that you issue the two RFQs as drafted unless you see some other, you know, something else that you want to have changed in here.
I might mention, too, that ACIP program that we based this off of is the one that we went to with the FAA, and they showed no objection to it at that time. So even though they may not fund it at this time, money may be available either through this main grant, this additional billion-dollar grant for rural airports, and as long as it's on here, then we've got a leg to stand on. So I would, Mr. Barrett.
I'd just like to add in the context of levity that perhaps we should change it from our Christmas wish list to our Easter wish list, because that's when it snows around here nowadays.
I completely concur with you, too, that we need to get on this now, because it just takes time to issue an RFQ, receive responses to the RFQ, process those responses, go through a rating of them, and then bring it back to the airport authority.
All right. Mr. Takis.
I was just going to add, too, I put a 35-page limit on these just so that we don't get buried with telephone books. And we did that 5 years ago, and it turned out to be good, because some of the proposals we got were like 34 and a half pages. And so it kind of keeps it manageable. And I fully expect Atkins, I didn't talk to Brian, but I fully expect Atkins will be submitting a bid, or not a bid, a statement of qualifications.
Okay, Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Takis, just from my information, you know, once we start the negotiation process, does the FAA issue guidelines for what it should what we should pay for these kind of services?
You know, if you look at the advisory circular, it's really thick and it's got a lot of stuff. It's really thin in that topic. One of the things that we are required to do, though, is once we negotiate the rates, we're required to go out and get an independent estimate of costs. And if there's a way to get that independent estimate before we negotiate the rates, that might be a very useful tool for us. In the past, we've just negotiated the best thing we could, and then we found an engineering firm, or I think it was a combined planning and engineering firm, that went ahead and calculated this is what we think fair rates would have been. And then we have to submit that independent pricing along with the final contracts to the FAA. And so there's this other tool out there, but it wasn't really good. I mean, last time we sat down, we just basically looked at the rates that we had gotten under our previous contract, and then we kind of did some inflation adjustments to them and then negotiated the rates on that basis. But as you know, you're just moving it along. You're not really resetting it to, you know, some kind of fixed good information.
If it doesn't cost us any more to get the estimate in advance of starting the negotiations, that probably would be a very useful piece of information.
Thank you. Any other questions on this item? Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the RFQs and direct the airport staff to publish them and seek qualified firms for responses.
I move.
Mr. Harris has moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
That was you, Mr. Rogers. All right, thank you. I have a first and a second. Any discussion on the motion? None heard. Any public comment? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? None heard. Motion carries. Item number 8 for possible action, discussion and approval to submit a bill draft resolution that has changes to Airport Authority Act for Carson City, Chapter 844, Statutes of Nevada, 1989, to State Representative Al Kramer for amendment. Mr. Takis.
Yes. The Chapter 844 is the law that created the Carson City Airport Authority. And we've had feedback from city supervisors and others on the four-year term. Right now, each of you can serve 4 years, and with the exception of the city member, in this case Supervisor Barrett, with the exception of him, all of you are not allowed to serve beyond that first term. You have to sit out for 4 years before you could come back. That was purposely done by Bob Thomas when he drafted the legislation because he didn't want it to be a good old boys network where you got the same people in there and nothing ever changed or moved forward. The flip side is that what we've learned is most of our planning is on 5-year intervals, and so we don't have anybody who's on the authority who adopts a plan who sees it through to completion because you never really get there, and the plans that are en route, you step in when they're already en route. And so it's not very helpful from that standpoint. And so the discussions that we've had with Supervisor Bagwell, for one, were that maybe we should make it so you can serve 2 terms in a row. You could serve an 8-year period before you'd have to get off. That way you could see some of these plans through to fruition. Plus, I also gave her and others the observation that I don't see the good old boy network having happened. And I don't think it's going to happen. We have a variety of people with different viewpoints, and it's pretty much been that way since the Airport Authority was formed in 1989. And it's been a real varied group of people with experience and opinions. So, what we would propose is that we have language, which I've highlighted in the first page of our statute, that says each other member of the board may serve 2 successive 4-year terms and then is eligible for replacement to the board 4 years after the expiration of the prior term. So you'd have to get off for 4 years, and if you were crazy enough to want to come back after 4 years, we'd love to have you. But I think that satisfies it. And then the other kind of corresponding change is at the very end of the law. When we first wrote it, it was designed so that you would have 4-year anniversaries of different dates to make sure the terms were always staggered. But the way it was written, it actually just said 2 people whose terms expire on the following dates, And what it really should have said is they expire on four-year anniversaries of those dates. And so I've changed that language so that it's a rule that applies into the future. And it, that eliminates an issue that had popped up in the past about somebody leaves midterm. Does the new person get a full four-year term, or do they get part of a term? This makes it really clear. They get part of a term, but they're eligible to serve the next term. The one other language change that I made was in Section 24. Section 24 says that the board, meaning you guys, may adopt procedures for hiring, promoting, and discharging employees, which include a variety of elements. And the one that didn't make sense to me, and I think it might have just been an LCB drafting thing, was on disciplinary action. And it made it sound like there's got to be a right of notice and review if you have any discussion with your employees about their performance. And I think what was intended is if you're going to discharge somebody, if you're going to fire them, then you need to offer them a right of notice and review, because that's really the action that would be reviewable. And so I've just clarified that language, at least in my opinion, I've clarified it so that it says what I think it meant all along. Now, if you have any other changes to this, this would be the time to do it. Assemblyman Kramer has offered to give us one of his bill draft requests to do this. The one thing I would urge you is try and keep it, your changes within the Carson City Airport, because when we went through this and made changes the last time, because it only affected the Carson City Airport and didn't affect other agencies and other airports and other people, we had relatively no resistance at the legislature. And even with no resistance, it was still a lot of work to get it walked all the way through the legislature. But if you add things in here that affect other airports, you bring in a whole nother dimension and a whole lot of complications. And so that would just be my only recommendation. One other thing I should mention is once we get done, you guys get done deciding what you want to do in here, then my goal would be, or my plan would be, to take it to the Board of Supervisors to make sure we have buy-in, because we want to go as a unified group, you know, and not find out later that there was something that we unintended change that caused some problems to the city. And I can answer any other questions you have.
Member Rogers.
Mr. Takis, my only concern is who has say-so on whether a person takes a second four-year term? I mean,
You would have to reapply for it. I mean, the way I see it is you would be coming to the end of your term. What the supervisors would do and what the city manager's office does right now is they issue an announcement that there's a position available, and then you'd resubmit your name along with the other names. That's how I would envision it happening. And because what would do is it's not a restriction on you serving a second term, but I don't think it's a mandatory thing to anybody. It's not mandatory on you, and it's not mandatory on the supervisors. If they don't like the way you've ruled, or they have some issue with it, or maybe they like you, but they just like somebody else better, I would want them to appoint whoever they think's best.
That's perfect from my perspective. I don't know whether that needs to be written down anywhere, or whether it may not belong in this particular regulation. But I just think that, I mean, if the question came up to me, I think it might come up to somebody else.
Member Golden.
Steve, there's no right or wrong answer. Just your opinion here. How important is it to add this language in Section 4, Subsection 3, for two successive four-year terms?
Well, it's intended to say that you're eligible to serve a second four-year term, and if there's a better way to say that, I'm all ears. I mean, there probably is. I mean, this is just what kind of
I think you're missing where I'm coming from.
Okay.
On this.
Okay, maybe I am.
No, I'm not worried about the verbiage or the semantics. No, it doesn't bother me. What I'm wondering is the nexus of this is there some importance or significance? I heard your comment about five-year cycles. I've never seen limiting this to 4 years being an issue. I'm just curious. I mean, I know after 4 years, that's it for me. This is a volunteer deal. I'm just kind of curious. Is there some significance or importance to this that we something that necessitates this?
Yeah, the issue it was brought up by a couple of people who wanted to stay on for a second term, and they were told that, hey, our interpretation of the statute by the DA's office and myself was, no, it seems pretty clear you only get 1 4-year term, then you aren't eligible for another 4 years. We did have a member, Harlow Novell, who served for 4 years, then went off for 4 years, and came back for 4 more years. So some people have been, I don't know, either motivated or crazy, whatever your perspective is, to come back and serve more. But I think from the standpoint of the quality of the work that can be done by the Airport Authority, I think it's enhanced when we have people who can be here through a 5-year planning cycle instead of being limited to 4. And so that's where I think the real value is. I mean, the other thing, too, is this could turn into a situation where some people decide, you know, I think 6 years is good for me, and they bail out after, you know, 2 years into the second term. We appoint somebody new. Great. They are now eligible to do 6 years as well. And so it's, you know, I think this would work for us. It may well be that we don't have anybody who wants to serve more than 4 years. If that happens, that happens. The only person who is somewhat indentured is the city member, because that 4-year restriction has never been on the city member, the city representative. And so if the city member wanted to serve longer than 4 years, and I think when Walt Sullivan was the community planning director, I think he did serve for more than 4 years. That's okay. And I think Lou Buckley, when he was the fire chief, served for more than 4 years. That's the rationale. It doesn't make it so. It doesn't make it that you guys have to serve. It doesn't make it that we will get people beyond 4 years, but it doesn't restrict us from it either, and that was where we had a problem the last time.
I just see – I'm of a different mindset. I see a benefit to keeping it the way it's written right now, which is 4 years – you're done. Come on back in another 4 if you really want to help out.
My only concern about that is the situation we just faced this last year, when we had a member who came in to fill a position that was vacated, and he couldn't run for another 4 years. He couldn't serve another term, even though he had only served 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So that's the problem. Member Harvey.
Thank you. Sorry, I hope it wasn't waving too hard on you down there. Well, just so this is equal to the Reno Tahoe Airport Authority. They do 2 4-year successive terms. I will tell you, as somebody who did that, you finally get your stride about that third and fourth year, and I would say that I think you're more effective if you could go a little longer. I would just say there's maybe the RTA has a little more challenges to understanding the finances, because you have parking garages and gaming and all that, but the fact was, honestly, it took me 3 years to kind of get my feet, so I felt that having that opportunity was great. Some people choose not to, and I think the way it's drafted, eligible for reappointment, not automatic.
Right.
You got to be reappointed by the governing board, and that's how we had to do it too. They may not choose to let you, you know, if I had to go, in my case, we had different entities, so the city of Sparks, I had to go back to the mayor, and he had to be okay with it. And so you have challenges in getting your second one. It's not automatic by any means, but I thought the opportunity, most people seem to do that. And even then, I can tell you, we still have a sort of a club. We meet every month for breakfast, the old retired Airport Authority members, to stay connected to what's going on. It's a rotation. Even 8 years, it rotates pretty well, but we thought that the connection, to have people with more experience, to help others who are new, it seemed to work out pretty well. And your point, Madam Chair, on the poor someone who leaves in midterm, that was interesting, because in the RTAA, I know I came in finishing someone's term. It didn't count against me the way they drafted that particular rules. But in their rules, you cannot come back. two, done, no way to come back. Of course, in their case, I could get appointed by a different authority, so if I get the county or somebody to do it. But anyway, I think this was consistent, and I found it to be, frankly, pretty beneficial to have somebody who kept some knowledge on for a longer term for the same reason that Mr. Takis said, and that is that you can actually see a project all the way through to the end. So anyway, I'm in support of the of that. Just...
Vice Chair.
A couple comments. First one, I don't know Al Kramer, but I want to go on record as thanking him for accepting whatever we end up giving to him to take on this. It sounds like it's a big hassle to do it, so that I think that's very appreciated from the board. Secondly, I think that there are quite a few things in 844 that are kind of vague, and I would prefer to see a committee meet for 2 or 3 weeks to kind of get a fuller list of what needs to be dealt with. On first read, there's stuff in here that I think is kind of weird. Like, for instance, the way this is written, technically don't we have authority over Parker Carson as well because it's inside the limits of Carson City? Well, it's not clear on that. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here that requires Board of Supervisor approval, but it's kind of weird, like, the way that it reads. Why do we need Board of Supervisor approval to acquire personal property? If we go buy a snowplow, what's that got to do with the Board of Supervisor? It's our money. It's our pot. I'd like to see those kinds of things cleared up. And if we're going to take the time to do a BDR, let's just get everything that needs to be done so we don't have to do this again in 6 years or 8 years or however long it takes. I know the legislature meets so infrequently that this isn't something that we can just quickly, you know, 3 months from now, oh, we forgot to do this. Please add this on as a rider to some other bill or something. Let's just get all of the dirty laundry all sorted out and folded all nicely and neatly and put this to bed and not deal with it again for a very long time. I know there's also one other comment. There was a section in here that was talked about, I think section 26 from 1990, where this board and the Board of Supervisors were supposed to work out an agreement and do a bunch of stuff. We did that agreement, but nobody ever followed through on half of the stuff that's in the agreement. So I don't know why this language is still here, since nobody's ever actually followed through on some of these transfers. I think I was told at one point that it was the intent when this act was written for the actual real property to be transferred to the authority. That never happened, and I know that there were reasons for that. So why don't we as a committee sit down, take a look at what those reasons are, see if we can fix them, and then correct this language so that it's no longer there, saying that for 30 years, neither party has fulfilled their obligations under that agreement that was written back in 1989 or 1990, and then make that agreement go away so we don't have to deal with it anymore. Put it all in one piece of paper so that we're not pulling 15 different pieces of paper to figure out how we govern ourselves.
I'm all in favor of cleaning up as much as we can, just so that you have the history of that. The bill was adopted in 1989. In 1990, the Solicitor General issued, on behalf of the FAA, issued an opinion letter saying, you know, we looked at your new law, and because the Airport Authority has the right to do an ad valorem tax, a property tax, but that can only be done on the approval of the Board of Supervisors, we find that the Airport Authority does not have taxing authority directly, and therefore they cannot be a grant recipient, a grant sponsor is their terminology. And that's what caused us in 1990 to do a cooperative agreement with the city saying, okay, we understand we've got this problem. The city will remain the grant sponsor because the city has the right to do ad valorem property taxes. And the Airport Authority will do all the airport stuff, be primarily responsible for the operations and the management and everything else of the airport. And so one way to fix that would be to unhook property taxes, the ad valorem tax, from the Board of Supervisors' approval. I don't know if that's a wise political thing to do. The other thing is, I don't know that we as an airport authority would ever assess a real property tax. I mean, if there's one way to get everybody in the city mad at you, that's probably it. Give them a new tax for an airport, some of whom find noisy and obnoxious, and many of whom don't even realize the economic benefits that the airport brings to Carson City. And so that's a good issue. I mean, I don't know where to come out on that issue, but in the past we've kind of held off. There was one point where we tested the water. Marv Teixeira was the mayor, And I felt like a sacrificial lamb being sent to the Board of Supervisors to propose this idea that maybe you guys adopt a property tax to support the airport. And I really thought they were going to tar and feather me and run me out of the room. They looked at me like I'd landed from another planet. And their response is, what? You want us to adopt new taxes on all the citizens of Carson City? And it kind of just went downhill from there. Now, on top of that, I would have to say that the mindset of most of the members of the Airport Authority throughout the years has been, we ain't looking for new taxes. We're looking for a way to make the airport self-sufficient based on its own ability to raise revenue and cover its expenses. And so I think most of the people, in fact, pretty much everyone I've talked to over the years, has said, I don't think we want to go there and be the straight taxing authority. Now, if you don't do that, then we're kind of stuck with the hybrid situation that you point out, where we have this cooperative agreement, which, by the way, expires in the year 2020. And so we need to start working on it. We're in 2018. And if we're going to revise that agreement, which would make a lot of sense, that's one of the things we should work on. But I like your overall thought, though, is to the extent we're fixing things, we should do them right now. There is a little bit of time pressure on us because Assemblyman Kramer has told me several times, you know, there's going to be a glut of these bills coming in. If we can get on the front end of that glut, then ours gets drafted first, and we can push it through the early days of the legislature when they don't really have a whole lot to do, and now we've got something that's non-controversial that we can push through. And Supervisor or Assemblyman Livermore and I did that the last time. And it's amazing. It's an amazing process because you'll run into some people who don't have a dog in this fight at all, and their first question is, what do I get out of it? What are you going to promise me to do on some bill for me so that I approve this? And you try and tell them, no, there's no give and take. This is just a good thing, and it doesn't hurt you. Why would you stand against it? And unfortunately, in a lot of political circles now, there are people that feel that they have to get something for anything they do. And we ran into that with the chairman of the Senate committee, where after we got the bill passed unanimously through the assembly and sent it over to the Senate, it gets referred to a Senate committee, and the chairman of that Senate committee sat with me and with Assemblyman Livermore and said exactly that. What are you going to give me for this? And I think you understand that I'm going to be expecting you to rule, you know, to vote in my favor on something I'll think of later. And we're like going, what? This is, you know, all we were doing is changing the terms. I can't remember what we did last time, but it was so, oh, what we did is we changed it so that if we can't find a manufacturer, the Board of Supervisors has a fallback and can appoint a general public person. Now, why that anybody would take issue with that is beyond me, other than the political process. So backing up to where I started with that, there is a value to getting it early and pushing it through early and trying to avoid those kinds of problems.
And Steve, what is that timing? What is that timing?
I don't know that there's an actual deadline or anything. I mean, I think there is a deadline of December or something, but we definitely want to get it all done before the election cycle gets close to its crescendo, because people who are newly elected, they're ready to go with BDRs, and they're just waiting to get elected so they can submit them. So Assemblyman Kramer has told me, come on, get me something. And he's told me that for a couple of weeks now. So
the other thing I might add to that is if we go ahead as it's tonight, as it's presented, he can get a placeholder in. We can give him additional language all the way through the summer. Okay. That's not the primo way to do it, but getting it into the hopper, getting a number assigned is extremely important. Then we can come through with additional language and have it drafted long before the November elections are here. And that gives us some time to work on the other things that we might need in addition to this, but it gives us something to hand him to say, this is where we're going to go. All of it, there's a rule at the legislature that if you have a BDR, The only amendments to it have to be germane to that part of the law. And we specifically deal with Chapter 844 of Nevada Statutes 1989. And so whatever we propose to go into that would still be
in scope
of that particular statute. So I think that we're good as far as that's concerned. I think that if I when I first started on the board, I talked to Mr. Takis about this exact thing. Let's take Title 19. Let's take the cooperative agreement. Let's take 844. Look through it. See what is no longer applicable. Amend that stuff out, and then make sure that everything is copacetic. So I'm totally on board with what you're talking about, and I think this is the starting point. So at that point, Mr. Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to say that I agree with the process. I think I see things in here. I know I've talked with Steve about that. I would love to take a little time and walk through here in the disciplinary and some of those issues. So I think your point of acting now but then getting a committee over the next few months to come back to us in June or July whenever they're comfortable, obviously vetting some our wise counsel on some of these items, I think that is a great idea. So I just support that. That's all I'm saying.
Mr. Takis.
I was just going to say I've come up with some slightly different language, thinking about Member Rogers' comments for that change on the first page in Section 4. Instead of saying each other member may serve two successive four-year terms, each other member is eligible to serve a second successive four-year term, so that it's pretty clear it's an eligibility issue. And we don't get somebody who says, oh, great, you agreed to volunteer. We're going to appoint you for 8 years right now. Now, keep in mind, even if you got appointed for 8 years, nobody can make you serve. I mean, I think that amendment to the Constitution was adopted a long time ago. We don't have involuntary servitude, so you can always resign from the post. But I think this would be cleaner language.
Except, as you pointed out, in my case.
Thank you, Mr. Takis. And my worst case scenario is somebody gets on the Airport Authority Board and just wants to be rabble rouse, and after 4 years they liking doing that, and they say, yep, I'm going to go do it for another 4 years. I mean, I'd like to have an oversight board. Because we don't think so. We think we found somebody better. Yeah.
Mm. Member Golden actually served on the Truckee Board where they're elected, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were. In fact, I know there were people who were elected to that board who were anti-airport. So you have anti-airport people on the board that's supposedly trying to run the airport.
The damage that those people caused to that airport has taken a toll that is dramatic. There's a gentleman sitting in the audience tonight that moved his aircraft, plural, to Carson City Airport from Truckee, and he is not the only one. Many people left the airport there. The damage that those people caused, and they were elected in 2004, spanned 12 years. They are just now getting back on their footing and have just now started to run the place like an airport again. So, yeah, you can have some very serious problems. That's why I asked the question about this. But I like Linda's idea. That's probably a happy medium. Mm-hmm. I would propose, that we go with this for now, subject to revision at a later date.
Member Barrett.
Bringing us back to the two successive terms, I think probably most of us were here when I want to say I agree with Supervisor Bagwell that it's a good idea to go there. I'm glad we're talking about going there. You may recall I had a dialogue with one of our witnesses a few times ago, and he pointed out how all of us here were newbies. I'll just use that term. And I told him that it was Bob Thomas's doing and that we're newbies because we can't be anything else. And the truth of the matter is you lose institutional memory. So I agree with her. I agree with you. I think this is a good idea to proceed. And I would add only this. which you've alluded to, Mr. Takis, and but only peripherally. Having, I don't know much about airplanes and airports. I'm good at sitting in a seat and letting somebody else fly the airplane, and that's about all I really know. But I have covered four legislatures in my lifetime as a newsman, and if you want to see balls in the air, you go and ask somebody, as you've pointed out, well, I want to have this little bill passed, and you will find they will line up to figure out ways to make sure they get something out of you. And when you get done, it will be, as Mark Twain, I believe, said, like watching sausage being made. So, and I know our chairperson can back me up on that. The truth of the matter is we want to be very careful how we approach it. I'm really glad that Al Kramer is doing that. But we, when we get this in place, we want to have our language as well crafted as we can and ask only for what we're sure we want, and then the wheeling and dealing will begin.
Thank you. Any other comments from the authority members? Any public comment on this item? None being heard, I would entertain a motion to approve the legislative changes to NRS 844 as amended during this meeting and direct the airport staff to work with Assemblyman Kramer to submit the bill to the Legislative Council Bureau, contingent upon us forming a committee to review the cooperative agreement, the 844 and Title 19 language. You can amend that. Vice Chair.
I'd like to put an expiration date on the committee. If we're going to create a committee, let's put a date that they have to have their work done so that it doesn't drag on and on and on. Maybe 120 days or
90.
90, okay.
Within 90 days. I would agree to that. So do I have a motion to include those that language? So moved. Member Vowell has moved. Do I have a second? Member Harvey has seconded the motion.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just for the record, could we say that it's a non-quorum committee?
Non-quorum committee.
Or,
yes,
or the number of members.
Three members or less.
Three members. Okay. Thank you.
To work with staff and our council. Thank you.
I just want to make sure I capture the motion correctly.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Any discussion on the motion? Any public comment on the motion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None heard. Motion carried. Thank you. All right. We will move on to item H, the engineer's report. Yes, let's take a 5-minute break and be back here at 8 minutes till. Seven minutes before 8, and we will go to item number H on the agenda, Airport Engineers Report. Mr. Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Chairman. Brian Fitzgerald with Atkins. One project that we have currently on the books is our taxiways projects for the seal and stripe of that. It's currently out to bid. We have a pre-bid meeting scheduled for Wednesday, May 2nd, with a bid opening on Tuesday, May 8th. Once everything has been reviewed on that project, I'll submit my recommendation to the board for the May meeting, which will be now the 23rd. And once that gets approved, then we'll be able to submit to the FAA for a grant to be able to pay for the project. And at this point, the FAA has indicated that they're probably looking at a minimum of 60 days, most likely closer to 90 days, from receipt of grant application before a grant offer will be given to the airport for this project.
which then puts it into the August-September time frame. So it's later in the season that it sounds like this project will be going through, but I just want to give you that heads up now that we could be doing this project early part of September at this time.
As long as it doesn't interfere with the air races.
That is a big target on the dates, yes. If anything, it'll be after the air races if it is going that long. Also, we're obviously going to be looking at the weather. We want to make sure that we have good enough temperatures to do what we need to do, which means it's probably going to snow the day we want to do anything important, as you all know. So that's what I have at the moment for our current projects. Like I mentioned earlier, the master plan is going forward. And also you'd mentioned about reviewing the ACIP, Airport Capital Improvement projects. I'm more than willing to sit down and discuss that with you at any time. So if you do have questions, comments, or concerns, please also send that off to me, and I can address them as they come in. Any questions?
Have we asked for the bids, or have we gone forward with doing an ACIP for the AWAS?
We're currently, thank you, that was one of the things I mentioned with Ken. We're currently getting a revised price for that equipment, as the time frame for that has expired. Once we get that new price in, we will put together a grant application and present it to the board at next month's meeting. We were hoping to have it for this meeting, but that unfortunately did not come in time.
Thank you.
Yep.
Vice Chair.
Well, is that for a direct replacement or for an upgrade to add like RVR or ASOS?
Yeah, direct replacement only. The FAA, just you had mentioned the ASOS several meetings in the past. Excuse me. The FAA for our type of airport only would provide funding at the time for an AWAS 3PT type, which is what we currently have. And ASOS gives out a little bit more important information for like a Part 139 or a larger airport as well. So I don't know if they would still go out and fund an upgrade to an ASOS type of equipment. But this one does the vast majority of that weather sensing as well.
So is it, what are the criteria for moving it to like an ASOS? Is it certificate holders using the airport, or is it the type of approaches that we have? Because we did mention that we'd like to get a precision approach, and getting RVR is going to be very helpful for making sure that approach is usable.
Agreed. And I'd have to compare it and look into that for you to make sure that it is a requirement or what we could get, you know, in our airport with what we have versus what you're proposing at this point. I don't have that off the top of my head, but I do know that the two different systems do slightly different things.
Is there a possibility of getting an AWAS that's upgradable in the future?
I cannot answer that at the moment without doing a little bit of research as well.
Member Golden.
There is a means outside of the FAA to have an ASOS at the airport that is funded by another agency, which is NOAA. Okay, and that is an option that the airport can pursue. It's what Lake Tahoe Airport did, because NOAA has an interest in having weather reporting stations at airports. So the ASOS at Lake Tahoe Airport is owned by NOAA, not by the airport. So something to consider if you want to have an ASOS.
We'll look into it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything further from you, Mr. Fitzgerald?
Not at this time. Any other questions?
Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Airport Manager's Report, Mr. Moen.
Well, this is my inaugural report. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say that I just finished working with Dirk on the transition, and he's been very helpful. He's given me an open caveat to call him back for future question and answer if possible. And he's also going to assist us with the open house. So I just wanted the community to know that he's been really diligent in his efforts to get me up to speed. And one of the things that he implemented was the traffic count process using the game cams. And so we do have an updated count for the month of March. I believe the count in February was in the neighborhood of 522. For March, we've indicated total operations of 413, included 24 jets, 25 turboprops, 34 piston twins, and 330 piston singles. I don't know if how he's counting all the piston-driven versus turboprop. I don't know if he gets a good resolution on some of those. You get half of an airplane sometimes on one frame and then the other half on another. But, you know, we're going to see if we can refine that. But I did hear some other options for doing traffic counts at the conference, and I'm going to follow up with a couple people on that. The other project that he and Gary have been just making incremental progress on is the route, the PAN and the terminal building replacement. I haven't seen where they got since I've left, but they did complete all the sheetrock taping and nail covering, and they did some limited sanding, and they were proceeding to put some molding around the top of the PAN and the wall because as that being a sort of round building, it was difficult to make all those ends match up, and there's some other stuff like conduit and some other stuff on the wall that required them to come up with a solution for that. I also brought in somebody to assist in some final quote-unquote decorating, and more in the idea of color scheme and what we can possibly do to take down some of the echo in the room. But I also asked them to assist me in looking at the front curb and some curb appeal to improve the drive-by and the look of the airport. And part of my meetings with not just the board members, I've also met with the city manager, as Mr. Rogers indicated, or Mr. Barrett did, and the mayor. And one of the comments that we discussed was how to improve the overall appeal of the airport as a representation of the state capital. And so we're going to try to explore some opportunities as we go around the next couple months to look at some of that. But as you are well aware, that there's currently not budget designated for that kind of work, but we're going to see what we can do to, come up with some ideas first and then see how we can maybe get some city help on that. That was one question I did float to the city manager was, and mentioned to the mayor as well, is what resources from the city were available to us to assist in things like that. And they wanted a specific ask, and I didn't want to make one at that point, but I think that's just given me the opportunity to plant the seed on that, and they seem receptive of that. Before I get to the open house, we had the Meet the Manager meeting on Saturday. I came out to the Young Eagles event first. That started about 8 a.m. The EAA gentleman, Frank, introduced me to the crowd, to the group that was assembled, but they weren't able to fly that day due to the fact they didn't have their insurance binder in place. So it seemed to be a timing issue with them and their submission. But they did walk through the program. There was a good turnout of kids. I'll bet you there were 18, 20 kids. So I was very impressed with the turnout. And I'll probably attend the next one just for the same thing, to watch their process. I understood that how the kids get selected and how they kind of test them on aviation knowledge and try to pick the candidates for that. So I kind of want to watch the second element to that, the flying part. We did have the Meet the Manager meeting at 11 o'clock afterwards. We took all the exhibits from the master plan. Brian, I think I have 10 of your easels I have to return. we had them set up in the room, and we also had the exhibits for the taxiway reconstruction project up, and they're still up on the wall. I believe that I didn't take a direct head count. I did do a sign-in sheet, but we had, I think, upwards of 40 people. Yeah, it was pretty good turnout. I was really pleased with that. And so in my plan, that was like the first entry level of meeting some of the tenants. I have one-on-one met with a couple of the other different tenants that I've had opportunity to come across, but I'll start incorporating that in a more diligent plan of visiting them at their location. I've been to Cactus Air Force, obviously been to El Aero and seen Brian's facilities as well, and then I met with Steve Lewis over at Sterling. So had some good conversation. I really want to get I met Mr. Graver on the airfield, but I do want to get together with the co-op or the condo association folks and have kind of a separate meeting with those owners. And one of the things I don't think I have a good understanding of that I really want to develop is what's available on the airfield for lease. You know, what kind of space is out there, and what do the spaces look like? And if somebody's inquiring that they want to relocate to this airport and a place to park an aircraft, you know, I think those would be helpful. I don't want to be in the leasing process, but I think as far as having a good understanding of what is on the airfield and the quality of those facilities, I think is critical. One thing about sharing the master plan information with that group, it really did elicit some good questions and good observations by the tenants. And I also mentioned in my other meetings with the mayor and the city manager about beating the bushes for the next public meeting and getting some of the city staff out to get involved in the master plan process. And I think just from the aspect of them seeing the airport, seeing what the forecasts are, what kind of facilities might need to be updated, and get their eyes on it and get their reactions to it. Board of Supervisors, I think, is going to be really important for us to upgrade this, upgrade the airport status as a, yeah, the feasibility of it, the status in the minds of the members of the community. And as you know, I attended the Nevada Airports Association, and I did just returned this afternoon from the AAAE conference, American Association of Airport Executives in San Diego. I want to say it was a fabulous opportunity because not only did I meet with Kaufman Associates, two or three of the principals, but also the gentleman that's doing the master plan. And so that was a great opportunity to talk on a higher level, but now we can get down the weeds a little bit more on some of these issues. And one of the pieces that we talked about was land acquisition and the possibility for that. Also, I talked with the FAA about I want to get in on the TERPS piece and understand the instrument approach issues and how they impact the airport. The other piece of that is I got to go out and talk to a bunch of different planners and engineers about our upcoming RFQ, and there's great interest in that. And I know Atkins is interested in it too, but Beaton Hunt, Armstrong Associates, Dyer Engineering, a local company, came out and did a site visit with us last week. And I just think to kind of get that excitement about our airport's really critical in the industry, and the opportunity not just to meet other airport managers here in the West, but also just to have conversations about our airport. And the first thing I kept saying to everybody is they'd say, oh, Carson City, where's that? And I would always come back with, it's the state capital. And I think that's a really important piece for us as an organization going forward, is to heighten that level of awareness that we are the seat of government in the state, and the airport should reflect that. The other piece I had separately with the board members, I met with everybody once. I have a follow-up. I'd like to come back with Vice Chair Vowles, because I met with him first, any of the members. I think it was the day I finished my contract negotiation. Actually, I wandered over to the airport and the south side of the airport from Click Bond, and sat with Mr. Val then. But I want to follow back up for that conversation, because the things that I've discussed with everybody since then is materially different than it was that first meeting. Yes. But I have met with quite a number of folks on that list, and I feel like we'll be closing down on that within the time frame I set for myself for the first 60 days. I'm meeting with the fire marshal here next week, and then I want to follow that up with the sheriff's department and meet the fire chief for the city as well, and then get into the planning department, meet the public works directors and some of those folks. But the comment that, or the discussion we've had with almost everyone so far has been about the open house, which you've seen the official date is now June 23rd, which is the last Saturday of the month. And it's we're having a put together committee to help with the planning process for the open house. And I don't know if this has been discussed amongst the members of the authority, but Mr. Rogers has indicated he is interested in assisting, as is Mr. Harris. So we have a meeting tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock in the terminal building where we'll meet with Dirk will also be there, and I don't know if the gentleman from Cactus Air Force is going to be there or not, but Josie Martell, who's with Invo Marketing and has assisted us with the ad design on that that you saw for that flyer, she's already had a facilitated meeting with us in the Carson City Visitors Bureau, and they're going to do some printing for us on posters, I think they're going to do, and also a small program, like a multifold piece. So we're going to talk about a number of things. I noticed that, I forget at the moment, I think it was Mr. Rogers that asked about the budget or the revenue from the open house. And that's really wide open now. I know what they've done in the past, and I've looked through the past records, but that's one thing we're going to talk about tomorrow is what sponsorships look like, where our possibilities for revenue are, and how we're going to cover the expenses that we have for the event. We do have some commitment for military-style aircraft, but I really want this to be a GA static display with as many different types of general aviation aircraft that we can get on the airfield. I think that when kids and families come to an airport like ours, that's the aircraft they're going to see. Sure, we want to, if we get an F-18 out here and a CH-47 from the Guard or C-130, great. I'd be thrilled with that, but if I can get a Learjet, a Gulfstream, a Citation, new Cirrus, you know, all that kind of stuff, an Aztec, a Baron, you know, you name it. For example, I think that, when I met with Mr. Harvey, he introduced me to Collie Hunter, and Ms. Hutter gave me a quasi-commitment for an aircraft to be displayed out there. Their Aerostar, which I found out had serial number 1 on it, if I'm not mistaken, I think that would be a unique aircraft to have at the open house. With all that other being said, there's one other piece I want to talk about briefly that everybody's really coalesced behind, and that's the idea of a strategic plan. I've got a great buy-in on that and some different ideas, and I look forward to I think it's more timely to get this working group together first for the enabling legislation changes, but we can follow that up. That might drive some discussion, but follow that up with the strategic plan committee and organization of that. So with that, if you have any questions for me, that concludes my report.
Any questions for Mr. Mohn at this time? Thank you very much. Legal counsel's report, Mr. Takis.
I don't have anything additional to report.
Thank you. Treasurer's report.
I like that answer. Wonder if I could go. Well, but basically we did cover the budget, so appreciate the comments today to be reviewed to be back in May. So I think we're pretty close on that. You do have your financial reports in front of you. You can see that we are on track at this point through the year. So far, so good, looking good. We're able to, like I say, with Dirk and now Ken's review and Beth kind of clean up some items, and of course our chair has always been a great help in this process. So anyway, so far so good. If you have any questions, please let me know.
Thank you. Moving on to item L, report from authority members, status review of projects. One of the things that I'd like to mention is I have gone down and talked to the treasurer's office and Mr. Sheets down there. I have approached him about depositing our excess funds with the treasurer's office as part of the local government investment pool, rather than try to get time certificates or investments through the banks and investment companies, which would include a lot of very technical stuff. They will allow us to deposit excess funds in there. They, at this point in time, with the interest rates being as low as they've been over the past few years, they still are paying just under 2% on the money. If we invested our excess funds in that, we could come up with $8,000 to $10,000 a year in interest income that we haven't had an opportunity to do so far. I'm in the process of filling out that paperwork and returning it to him just so that he can let us know for sure whether or not we qualify. I'm sure we will. But I wanted to let you know that's kind of an ongoing thing that I've been looking at, and I have met with them now, and it looks to be promising. So are there any other projects that are going on or items that members are working on that they'd like to make a report on at this time? Seeing none, I don't have any communications and administrative matters to discuss. I don't know of any correspondence in or out of the authority that we need to discuss. Are there any other comments in this regard from members of the authority? Seeing none and seeing no public comment, unless Ms. Knowles would like to say something, we will move past that item. Anybody that has an agenda item for the next regular meeting, again, please get a hold of the manager or Mr. Takis. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think we need a motion for adjournment. We are adjourned.